Thanks for joining us. I have with me Kevin Strain, President and CEO of Sun Life Global. Kevin, thanks again for making the trip all the way here, not just to KL, but to the All Asia Broadcast Centre as well. This is, of course, an exciting time for us to explore some of the ideas, not just of Sun Life, but of course, the global insurance industry as well. Maybe you can share with us your house views on the global outlook on the industry for insurance in 2023.
Yeah, well, first, thanks for having us here. It's great to be back in Malaysia. We started in Malaysia 10 years ago, and it's actually the first new country I ever added to Sun Life's global portfolio.
Really?
So it has a special place in my heart. If we're thinking about the broader global opportunity, as the world is now emerging out of COVID, out of the pandemic, we're actually seeing sales pick up. Interest in the products has actually picked up coming out of COVID, where people were forced to think about their health, we're forced to think about financial security, about longevity. Those types of things made people sort of assess things that were consistent with our purpose, which is helping clients achieve lifetime financial security and to live healthier lives. And so those things are so aligned with that sort of long-term thinking. So in a way, COVID's made us more aware of the need for our types of products. And so we're seeing growth in Canada and the US and Asia.
And now, of course, penetration for life insurance products is actually quite low in Malaysia compared to other countries.
Yeah.
I don't know what is the issue. Is it disposable income? Is it awareness? What would be some of the ideas that you have right now?
You know, it is a little bit disposable income. So if you think about lifetime financial security and health, as the economy grows, as people's individual wealth grows, they can start to allocate more of their savings towards those types of things, more long-term thinking. And that's one of the things we see across Asia. There's lower penetration in Asia than you would see in Canada, the US, or even in Singapore, Hong Kong, which are more developed economies. So as the ASEAN region continues to develop, and I think Malaysia is a great leader in that sort of area, as the ASEAN begins to develop more middle class, more affluent, you're going to see that this industry sort of aligns well with that, because we're thinking long-term, we're thinking about health, we're thinking about things that do need that sort of long-term investment thinking. And so the growth of the middle class is really important to that insurance penetration.
Let's talk about takaful, because a lot of markets, especially in this part of the world, Indonesia, Brunei, Malaysia, they're very attuned and sensitive towards takaful products instead of insurance products. Is that an area of focus for Sun Life?
It's a big area of focus for us, particularly in Malaysia, in Indonesia, parts of India, but we've actually started to introduce takaful products into Canada. And we're taking some of the learnings from Malaysia and from Indonesia into our product development in Canada. We're looking for ways of tying ESG products into our takaful products, but we see takaful as being a really important market for us. It's important for us here in Malaysia in particular, but also in Indonesia, and increasingly across the region, across the company.
Okay, just like any other industry, coming out of COVID-19, there's some cost pressures, there's some margin issues as well that needs to be looked at and looked at seriously. Would there be a situation, at least from the insurance industry, where things are going to be amalgamated, you're going to see a lot more M&As happening, where fewer players but bigger players are going to start to survive instead of the small players?
You know, the market conditions coming out of COVID aren't necessarily all bad for the insurance industry. You've seen, as inflation's happened, you've seen that interest rates have risen. And higher interest rates are broadly good for the insurance industry. So that's been a positive for us. And even the inflationary pressures, what that does for a lot of our businesses, it creates higher salaries for people, because inflation creates higher salaries. That creates actually more demand for our products. So the current environment isn't necessarily a bad thing for the insurance industry. Higher interest rates, a little bit of inflation. And in fact, I would argue that where we're at today is a much more normal place, where interest rates are maybe in the, globally I'm talking, because it's different by country, of course, but in the 4 to 5% sort of interest rates. Inflation to me is still a little high. I think you'd want to be maybe not where we were prior to the current situation, but maybe 2, 3, 4%. That also may be a more natural place for both inflation and interest rates to be. And I think those aren't bad conditions for our industry. So I don't think that the market conditions will drive consolidation. I think that they'll actually drive good fundamentals for the insurance industry.
Okay. Managing global portfolio is actually quite interesting. Asia, of course, is a little bit more nuanced than other markets, I presume. What would be some of the key drivers or some of the growth levers that you want to pull when it comes to Asia and the different markets within Asia?
Yeah, well, every country's different. There's no Asia. I ran our Asia business for 5 years.
There you go.
And when people think Asia,
it's like
you
Africa.
Go,
it's not a country.
It's not a country. Asia's not a country, and each market is different. And I can remember I started running Asia for Sun Life in 2012. And one of my first few weeks here, I went from Beijing to Manila to KL. And it doesn't take too much to figure out that these are all very different places and very different markets. And so one of the things we did actually is we drove those 5 years is for local leadership. So we always tried to have a local CEO like we do here in Malaysia.
Yeah,
we tried to have local distribution, local operations. We tried to build relationships with the regulators. So we have a very good relationship with Bank Negara, for example. So, you know, as a global company, we tried to structure that when you got into distribution, operations, senior business people, we have locals in all of those markets that understand the market, understand the culture, understand the language, able to really interact better. We often supercharge that with maybe a finance person, an actuarial person from Sun Life more broadly. Mm. It doesn't have to be from Canada or the US. It could be somebody from Hong Kong.
Mm.
Could even some, we have great Malaysian actuarial talent that we export to other places that are bringing that sort of cross-border. And we also try to bring technology expertise that is global in nature. So we try to take the best of the local and the local alignment and then align some of that global thinking to it. But there is no, as you say, there's, you know, Malaysia's is different from India as
even
Canada
Malaysia,
is from India.
Even
within Malaysia, there's multiple cultures. Yeah, it's a fascinating place to do business because we get the chance to see so many different things. It's actually one of the good things about being Canadian. Canada's a very diverse country, right? And so we think about diversity and understanding and trying to understand different cultures, and we're a mosaic of cultures, right? We allow for different cultures there, and that strength allows us to think differently when we go. We try not to put our sort of values on. We try to listen and learn and understand the culture of the different places.
Okay, digitization, digital transformation is inescapable in any industry. Let's talk about your journey, Sun Life's journey in terms of digitizing your products and services.
Yeah, so, you know, first, we've been on this journey for a long time. We've been calling it thinking and acting more like a digital company because digital is redefining how everything's done. That has multiple layers to it. And as much as that journey was started pre-COVID, it got accelerated in COVID because all of a sudden everybody, every advisor, every client had to interact with us more digitally. And the fact that we had the tools ready to do that was a really big help for us sort of taking that next step. Prior to COVID, none of the regulators in Asia or in Canada, in fact, would allow for an electronic signature on an application.
Yep.
It had to be a wet signature.
Yep.
COVID's forced the regulators to think differently, companies to think differently, and that was a good accelerator for adoption of what we were doing digitally, adoption of the digital tools. So it was happening pre-COVID, accelerated by COVID, and then more recently, we've been changing how we operate to operate more like a digital company. And that's been three sort of key things to that. The first is foundationally modernizing our technology. And 5 years ago, none of our computing was on the cloud. Today, over half of our computing's on the cloud, which allows for more data analysis, and those types of things. So modernizing the technology stack. The second thing was working in a more agile environment where we've asked IT and business to work more closely together, smaller deliverables closer to the client, more test and learn. That agile thinking has been really important to our sort of next step. And then the third step was thinking more about client journeys and how do the clients want to interact with us digitally. And, you know, sometimes what we found is clients want to choose. Sometimes they want to be face-to-face because they have deep sort of financial things. Sometimes they want to work
voice.
That's
also fine.
And sometimes they want to work digitally.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so being ready to work in all three matters has been really important to us. But that sort of overall concept of thinking and acting more like a digital company has been driving our growth in that area.
You're the second insurance player to come on this show, sit where you do, talking about how regulators are now a little bit more open right. to accepting these kind of ideas, including replacing wet signature versus online signature. And in Islamic will writing, for instance, you need to have two or one at least witness on the will writing. Everything is done digitally.
Right.
This wouldn't have happened, at least from that person's perspective. Regulators would not be more open to this idea if COVID, something like COVID, as sad as it is, did not take place. This precipitate changes towards digital adoption, but before anybody can actually settle down on this, now there's an advent of AI, automation, ChatGPT. Yeah. Quite literally, the guest before you were talking at length about how AI and automation and how this is going to change or revolutionize the way we do things moving forward. How has ChatGPT or the arrival of AI at the advent of it is going to impact your digitization process?
Yeah, so we're in early stages of course, this generative AI sort of evolution. And kind of like I was saying earlier that 5 years ago we had nothing in the cloud and today it's over 50%.
Yeah.
I think generative AI is going to be on the scene quickly as well. We're taking a cautious approach a little bit because there's a lot of cybersecurity privacy concerns, cultural concerns about how AI will work with different things. I was struck by an example of I'm speaking at an InsurTech conference in New York City in a couple of weeks, and the guy who's organizing the InsurTech conference had used an AI program, a generative AI program, to build a profile of one of the speakers.
Okay.
Well, the generative AI made up a quote. It wasn't really his quote. And so they didn't find that till after they'd published it and the guy phoned up and said,
oh
hey,
this is
not
is
my
not
quote.
Mine.
So I think you have to be careful. So I think generative AI is going to be transformative, but it's still in early stages. So we're doing some test and learn. So first, we are using it a little bit for some of the programming. So if you think about programmers, there you can use it to accelerate, but somebody needs to be able to oversee that and sort of incorporate it in so it can make programming more quickly. We're using it on our procedures manuals. So as you can imagine, as a global insurance company, we have these massive procedure manuals that people could queue for keywords, but it really didn't give you smart answers back.
Of course.
We've been working with AWS.
The quality of the answers really do depend.
Exactly. We've been working with AWS, and in fact, Andy Jassy, the CEO of AWS, is using us as an example in his town hall. In 9 days, we created a generative AI program that could give smarter answers on our procedure. So if you were looking for an expense procedure, you could actually do a query that would give you a smarter answer. So we're trying to do it as a test and learn sort of approach because there are these weaknesses, but we can also see that it's going to work through the weaknesses and it's going to give you a way of interacting with clients that improves the efficiency, that improves the ability for you to deliver on our purpose, right? For you to help the client understand their financial security needs, to help the client understand their health needs. So I think generative AI is going to be a big deal, but you're going to have to do it in a very smart way over a period of time that builds capabilities as much as even reducing cost. I think it's going to be about building capabilities, about being faster.
The reality is that while you have a plan in place and a structure in place on trying to see how generative AI can actually improve your business, it sounds a lot like you're really stumbling across the things that needs to be done because, quite frankly, nobody has gone through this journey yourself.
Yes.
Does that sound like...
It's test and learn. It's agile. Back to that thinking of doing things differently, it's finding small problems that are close to the client and using this to solve those problems, learning from it, and then taking the next step. And I think it would be a
out of curiosity, how are you structuring your own internal organization? Because previously, you can just dump it to the CTO or the CIO, and then, you know,
that's a great
come back to me every month. And I don't think that can be done anymore.
That's a great question. So I've actually charged two people to lead this work for me. The first is our head of IT, Laura Money, and she's the global head of IT. And there is certainly a big technology aspect to this, but we've brought on a chief client innovation officer, a guy named Chris Wei, and Chris is based here in Singapore, or based in Singapore. And
Singapore and Malaysia.
Yeah, sorry, it's close. Yeah, of course.
Wink.
Remember where I am.
Yeah,
so but he's based in Singapore, and Chris is bringing that client focus to it. So we're combining the business focus and the IT focus together, and I like the fact that Laura sits in Toronto. Chris sits here in Singapore, part of our Asia sort of focus, and bringing those two things together and looking at it both from a business and an IT perspective, a client and an IT perspective.
Though I don't think that's sufficient, right? Because there would be user requests from all your major product owners, your major geographic owners, and they need to feed these two individuals and their divisions on what is needed, because they can only work with what they know.
Well, you can think that each of them, so we have a head of IT for each of our big pillars, Canada, yeah. US, Asia, asset management, then each of them have IT people. So what we're doing is pairing those people down through the organization, but at a leadership level, we've got the two that are helping to coordinate and organize it.
Where do you see this company moving forward when it comes to trying to bring value for your clients? Because it is inescapable that your company is going to be an IT company full on.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's going to make us...
Is it still an insurance company or not?
That's a great question. It's still an insurance company at our core, and it's still it's a purpose-driven company. It's focused on helping our clients achieve lifetime financial security, so learning more about what that means, and helping our clients live healthier lives. And I'll give you an example of that. We're increasingly, when it comes to healthier lives, getting into the provision of healthcare. So if we look at the future, healthcare is becoming more and more challenging for people to access, particularly in North America. If you look at
here as well, I'm sure.
Here too, yeah. If you look at North America, we expect to have 70% of the doctors and nurses that we need in the next 10 years. Mm. And so we're trying to find ways to extend our business into that. We're the largest investor in a company in Canada called Dialogue. Mm. Dialogue's a virtual care company, also has a wellness platform. Mm. As a virtual care company, what we've done is we've made Dialogue available during COVID to all of our clients so that they could, if they didn't feel comfortable going to their doctor physically, they could go to Dialogue virtually. And I think that this extension of us being purpose-driven and extending into health and healthcare is going to be very important to us as a company. In the US, we bought a company, our second largest acquisition we've ever done in the history of the company 2 years ago, called DentaQuest. DentaQuest has close to 100 dental practices in the United States, and we see this as a potentially growing area. So extending into healthcare. And in Hong Kong, we own a digital insurance company called Bowtie, our own 40 some odd percentage of Bowtie. And Bowtie's now opened a clinic in Hong Kong where you can go into the clinic, you can meet a Chinese medicine doctor, get some acupuncture, you can do a wellness assessment, blood work done, you can get vaccines, they have a small pharmacy. So this concept of taking our vision of being, of helping people live healthier lives and extending it into navigation of care, provision of care, and past the typical insurance industry, which was just benefits payment.
It seems like everybody inside Sun Life needs to get on with the digitization program. It goes without saying that while you guys are experts in your respective fields, either in traditional Chinese medicine, like the company that you just acquired, or at least have a 40% ownership, or the dental company that you acquired in North America, if people are not really going to get on board with the technology program right now, it seems like you might be on the losing end of things. How are you evangelizing this, or at least instilling this idea that everybody must get involved in digitizing themselves, get a little bit more acquainted with generative AI?
Yeah.
I cannot imagine your actuaries that proficient in this space. You know what I mean?
Well,
so how do you get them all in one shot?
It's interesting you bring up the actuaries, because the actuaries are actually quite interested in this because it aligns to almost their way of thinking, because they've been data managers for a long time, for eons. So, you know, it's really important if you think back to the three things I talked about, right? The tech stack, and that really is driven by IT, and we want that to be coordinated and driven by IT. But the agile working and the client focus, so one of the things that we want to do is start to understand our clients better, start to understand our clients using digital technology to understand the data so that we can align the products and we can align the service model and the solutions more closely to them. And I use an example, and I apologize, it's a Canadian example and it's a very personal one. In Canada, I've been part of Sun Life for 25 years. So my daughters have all been Sun Life clients for their benefits for 25 years. You can be covered as long as you're in university until you're 25 years old.
Okay.
2 years ago, my oldest daughter turned 25. She had a job, she'd had her master's degree at University of Toronto, and she phoned me up one day and she said, Dad, I'm at one of the banks in Canada and I'm buying a retirement plan, but I don't know what investments to go into. Can you tell me? And I'm thinking, how did my daughter end up at a bank? We do that, right? And what happened was we didn't understand her as a person.
No.
We just understood that we paid her dental claim or we paid her pharmaceutical claim.
Yeah, so you're not part of the customer journey.
Right.
At all.
So that is the change. We have to get people thinking about clients and what they're going through and using that data, using that digital footprint to make them friends, digital friends, right? To understand them better, to understand their needs and then drive that through.
So generative AI can solve this.
Generative AI can help do some of it, but people thinking differently and people thinking more about client journeys. In the past, the insurance industry relied on distributors to do that.
Not in the past, I think currently,
yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah.
But increasingly, we need to power those distribution partners with this digital understanding.
Because I don't think they would know that this is the thing that they need to know. Get it?
There's a lot of training.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. There's a lot of training and education and really, but there's so much opportunity here that when you start to teach people,
yeah,
they start to understand it.
And you learn more from the process.
Absolutely. And so one of the things we've trained over 3,000 people in agile way of working. And we want to continue to see that accelerate. So that once you start to see the power of that and people like to work in that environment, they start to see the power of data, then it all starts to come together. So you're absolutely right. It's a big training session that's needed, but the opportunity and the ability to deliver our purpose better is significant.
Let's talk about the catalyst to make this all work. I don't know how much you can share or divulge, but how would capital be deployed in the next few years for Sun Life?
Oh, that's really interesting. We prioritize first organic growth. And so we try to find where our business is growing most quickly organically. And we're really lucky that Canada is a foundational business for us. We've been in business there 150 years, but it's still growing 6 to 8%. Mm-hmm. The US has been growing close to 10%, fueled a little bit by inorganic, but also organic.
Mm-hmm.
And Asia has been growing over 15% a year.
Mm-hmm.
And so Asia is a big priority for us of investing in that growth, investing organically into that growth. But we've also done some significant bank assurance transactions in the past 3 years in Asia. We did two in Vietnam. We upped our agreement in Indonesia with CIMB, CIMB Niaga there.
Mm.
And we've just announced a bank assurance transaction with a bank called Dossing in Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
So we see Asia as growing significantly organically, and then we're trying to supercharge that with some bank assurance deals and those types of things. So Asia's is a big part of our growth engine, a big part of how we think about growth. And Malaysia has a special part in our heart because CIMB Niaga is our biggest, or CIMB here is our biggest partner, CIMB Niaga in Indonesia. We've got this regional relationship with CIMB, and they've been a great bank for us to work with that helps drive out that bank assurance side of our growth.
Final question is on talent. What would be some of the ideas that you can share with us in terms of what kind of people do you want to work with you guys right now?
Yeah, so we've been defining our culture, and we're just in the process of doing that. Collaboration is really important to us. Bringing your authentic self to work is really important to us. How we make decisions and aligning our decisions and accountability, and then empathy, integrity, those are sort of the core values of the company. That spells care. It's about getting close and caring for the client, caring for each other, caring for the business. And if we can create a culture where people care, have those things that I talked about, collaboration, authenticity, integrity, responsible decision-making, getting decisions made faster, that is going to accelerate the company. And those are the type of people that we look for. I once had a boss that says he tried to hire people that give the business energy, not take it away. And that's also part of it, like bringing that energy, bringing that enthusiasm, bringing that ability to to win, to do well is really important. So those are the types of people we're looking for.
You're actually bucking the trend because, if I'm not mistaken, up to three guests of mine on this show was talking about how the lack of empathy is permeating across corporate culture. And this is exacerbated by the COVID-19 pandemic. People are working remotely. People are not necessarily empathetic towards each other and towards, I guess, it translates towards their clients as well.
You know what? I think it is... it's something that we've tried to incorporate into the culture, that we try to look for ways to support so that people realize that we're all in this together to deliver on our purpose, right? Mm. So purpose, keeping that purpose front of mind, making sure that everybody who works at Sun Life understands that we're here to help our clients achieve lifetime financial security and live healthier lives, creating that alignment and creating that support model, and empathy and integrity are just so important to us being able to do that. So it's not easy, but it's something that we spend a lot of time on.
Final comments before we conclude our conversation. It seems like you have your plate full right now. Final comments.
Oh, final comments for me. First, it's great to have our 10th anniversary here in Malaysia. I always love coming back to KL. It's great to see the Sun Life brand growing here. We've got a great partnership with CIMB, and that's been really important to us, as I was saying, to bring bank assurance thoughts across Asia. We've got a great partnership with Khazanah. You've got a great regulator in Bank Negara here. So this has become a very important market for Sun Life, and so it's always a pleasure to come to see the team, to see the energy of the team. We got to play a little bit of soccer yesterday. I got to watch the soccer in your studio on the way here. So right. Football, it's a Canadian stuff.
Yeah.
But it was it's great to see the energy in Asia. So I always love coming back, and it's thanks for hosting me. And it's great.
It's a pleasure having you on. This is a fantastic conversation. Good. You are by far the most interesting insurance person I've had on the show.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for that.
That was Kevin Strain, the president and CEO of Sun Life. You can learn more. Head off to Sun Life's website. You can also learn about their products and services across their partners in Asia as well as in Malaysia. My name is Ibrahim Sani. Catch you in the next one.